Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus King coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, the crux of the show this week will be what's next for AEW, given that they have lost, probably rightfully so, their top star, and they're coming off of setting an all-time attendance record to setting an all-time low viewership number. I think it's fair to ask what is next for AEW, and we're also going to be getting into a little bit of the talk about whether the WWE could actually trust a CM Punk re-signing or if that would be a horrible idea. But we do have a lot of news to cover first, so let's get to probably the most important because it takes place sort of outside the ring, and that is that Hacksaw Jim Duggan apparently suffered a medical emergency in which he was hospitalized and had to undergo emergency surgery. Now, if you're familiar with Hacksaw Jim Duggan's health problems, he's had a bout with cancer. He's had some issues. This is apparently nothing to do with that. His wife did post on social media, but she did not make it super clear what happened. She did say he was suffering a bad infection, but I'm not sure what an infection would have to do with an emergency surgery. We'll just have to wait and see. Her newest post said that he's feeling better. He's resting comfortably. He'll be up and around in a few days, and they promised to make good some of the commitments that they had to cancel. So I guess he's okay, which is a good thing. But there's really no clarification on exactly what happened. So not really sure what happened, Mike, but apparently Hacksaw Jim Duggan on the road to recovery.
Apparently. I mean, I know he had, what was it, not liver, but maybe liver or something. Some sort of prostate cancer. And he had to have that done. Obviously, he's okay. And look, this is a guy. This is one of the true badasses in sport. In wrestling and in life. The guy, I mean, there was a story a few months back about him fighting off of a guy that was on his land, right?
Yes.
And illegally on his land. So yeah, this is one of the toughest guys. I mean, that whole tough guy shtick that he did in the WWE, he lived it, you know. We cannot, I mean, it'd be sad to lose him, and we can understand with all his problems, if and when, everybody has an expiration date. Everybody's going to die, right? Yeah, I just hope that we get quite a few more years out of Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Yeah, and he's also a guy who is very, very good at acknowledging the fans and he does a lot of autograph signings and things like that. Very fan-friendly guy, appreciates the fact that he still has, a modicum of fame from his WWF days. The home invasion thing was an interesting story that happened a few months back. Once again, not sure what happened to him. All I know is that his wife said he suffered a severe infection and they had to do an emergency surgery. Now, I don't know what that surgery entails. I don't know whether it's an infection to an organ, like, you know, a kidney infection or, I don't know. They haven't really been very specific. So the only thing I can tell you is that her update sounded extraordinarily positive. She posted a picture of him resting in his hospital bed. thanked Jake the Snake Roberts and his wife for flowers and said he'll be back up on his feet in a short period of time, and they plan on rescheduling all of the events that he had planned. Now, he was up in the Glens Falls firehouse where they were honoring him when this thing happened. And apparently about 3:30 or so, something happened and he was rushed to the hospital. So we'll keep you updated on that. And again, our best wishes, obviously, to Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and hopefully he'll be back on his feet in no time. Now, I don't know if everybody noticed this, but on this week's SmackDown, L.A. Knight took a very poignant shot at Kevin Nash. For the benefit of people who do not know, Kevin Nash had some disparaging things to say about L.A. Knight. He basically said he stole everything he had from The Rock, why he wasn't popular to begin with. Excuse me, my voice is a little raspy today. It's why he wasn't popular in the other federations he was in, never rose to the top. He basically just stole everything from The Rock and wasn't a unique or particularly entertaining person without stealing someone else's persona. Well, this week on SmackDown, L.A. Knight took a shot that most people probably don't know, but I'm sure Kevin Nash knew, when he was talking about The Miz, and he said, if I were a moron, I'd say the word play as an adjective, but I'm not a moron, so I'd say it as a verb. Well, that was a shot at an old WCW promo that Kevin Nash had cut, where he used the word play as an adjective when it was not an adjective, play was a verb. And he basically said, if I was a moron, I would say it that way, and thus proving he really didn't know that play used in that form was obviously a verb, not an adjective. So that was an unveiled shot there at Kevin Nash, who basically made himself out to be a moron while saying he wasn't a moron. That's about as close as you're going to see, I think, Todd L.A. Knight get to firing back at some of his critics.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this whole thing with L.A. Knight and the Kevin Nash situation, looks like there was I didn't see no problem with L.A. took a shot at Kevin Nash. He's saying, I'm not here to play. That's all he said in the promo. That's all he said Friday night.
Should be very, very interesting to see if Kevin Nash fires back on this at all. And look, this is going nowhere. Kevin Nash has a right to his opinion. If he thinks that L.A. Knight ripped off The Rock, then that's his right to think so. But I want to remind people that L.A. Knight's been around for a long time. And he's always had a somewhat similar shtick to him. So I don't necessarily think that he modeled himself after anybody. I think he took certain things from certain workers. But doesn't everybody? Doesn't everybody? I mean, you don't flat out steal it, maybe. You don't say, well, I'm just going to be Stone Cold Steve Austin. But you take a little something from this one. You take a little something from that one. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I don't even think it's an unusual thing. I think people do it all the time. You can point out a lot of wrestlers today who are influenced and clearly influenced. Is Kevin Nash going to say that Kevin Owens is trying to be Stone Cold Steve Austin because he's doing his finishing maneuver and he's, this, that, and the other thing? Would he say that CM Punk was trying to be the guy from Japan because he stole his move? I mean, come on. How many people tried to be Gorgeous George or Buddy Rogers? Is Ric Flair, you going to accuse Ric Flair of being Buddy Rogers? At some point, you have to realize that, wrestlers are going to be influenced by other wrestlers. And I don't think it's fair to just say LA Knight's a cheap ripoff of The Rock, Mike.
No, we've compared him to kind of a poor man's Rowdy Roddy Piper. I mean, a lot of the sayings he gets from The Rock or whatever, he may or may not get from The Rock, but the way he delivers them. I mean, what he does is sort of the sort of a combination of The Rock and us and Piper, you know, the way he delivers it, right? So yeah, and like you're right about Nature Boy, you know what I mean? How many different Buddy Rogers, Ric Flair, Buddy Landell, you know, have used the Nature Boy moniker, have used basically that whole gimmick, right?
Right.
You know,
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I mean, Flair lived the gimmick, but people like Buddy Landell used the gimmick, you know? And, I mean, he was basically a mid-carder, a jobber mid-carder type guy was Landell. So, you know, and nobody argued with Landell.
No, this is my point. Of course you are going to take some things from your favorite wrestlers. Of course you're going to model your style after someone. Talk to anybody that comes up in the business. Oh, Kevin Nash never modeled himself after any of the larger guys, right? He never took anything from them. He's the guy that invented the power bomb. He's the guy that invented the bodyguard angle, the biker gimmick. I mean, come on. Come on. So I think it's ill-informed of him to say that. Now, there are people who are saying the same thing because they're saying, well, you know, he does the elbow drop and he does the, you know, let me talk to you thing. And it's, you know, I don't know. I don't know what your feeling is about it. My feeling is when I see LA Knight perform and do what he does, I see someone who is paying homage to some people. I don't see somebody that's ripping anybody off. Maybe that's just me, Todd, but I think LA Knight's fine.
Well, you're absolutely right there, like you said. Like you said, this is not a ripoff. He's just doing a shout out to Kevin Nash of like a tribute, like a little tribute to him.
That's the way I feel about it, really. I mean, you know, again, does wrestlers borrow from other wrestlers? Of course they do. Derek's asking, why would Nash be offended? Well, I don't know if Nash is offended. He's just saying, to me, LA Knight is not anything fresh or new or original or particularly entertaining. He's just a guy who's cosplaying as The Rock. I don't see it. I see a little bit of Stone Cold. I see a little bit of The Rock. I see a little bit of Roddy Piper. I see a combination. There's very few truly unique characters in professional wrestling who have not heavily borrowed from somebody else. I mean, look how many wrestlers have come before you. Of course you're going to borrow from somebody else. You're going to have grown up a fan. I would say that the majority of wrestlers who are in the business, Kevin Nash may not have been one of them, by the way, but most wrestlers who enter the business were fans. So, of course, they're going to be influenced. If you grow up as a child listening to certain kinds of music, you're going to be influenced by that music. And if you become an artist, you're going to use some of that music that you grew up with as an influence. That's not ripping somebody off. That's being influenced by somebody. Now, if he came out and said, it doesn't matter what your name is, that's a direct ripoff. He came out and did the stomp a mud hole in your ass and walk it dry thing. That's a ripoff. He's not doing any of that. He had that dummy yeah thing forever. He just dropped the dummy. So I'm not sure that Nash is on target with this one. Anyway, that's my thoughts about it. I think LA Knight giving that subtle little kickback to him was actually a good thing. It's actually a good thing. It proves that LA Knight is not going to take bullshit. He's not going to lay down and just say, oh, some guy who considers himself a legend is saying bad things about me. I better be careful what I say because he's friends with Shawn and he's friends with Triple H. No. He fired back on him. So that's good. I don't know if it bodes well for him in the WWE, but I think it's good that he's a guy who will do something like that. So, anyway, folks, if you are a member of our Facebook group, you've seen that I posted something that I found hilarious. I went back and I looked at some of the old AEW tapes that I remembered, and CM Punk, when his first tenure in WWE, said this about Jack Perry. I don't know why anybody would have a problem with Jungle Boy. In fact, if you've got some kind of a problem with Jungle Boy, you might actually be the problem. Amazing. An amazing quote from CM Punk. Now, I also went back and I found no less than 10 or 12 wrestlers who kind of warned us about CM Punk or have said these things about CM Punk. Because I know a lot of people who listen to this show are still in this denial that CM Punk is a guy who really deserved to be fired or doesn't really fit in to this business. And I can name you the guys. John Moxley said that CM Punk has a weak, a fragile ego, and a fragile body. And you better enjoy him while you can, because he's not going to be in AEW very long. Prophetic word. There's one. Seth Rollins called him a cancer. Said, stay home, do something else with your life. Nobody wants you over here. There's two. We had AJ Styles say, I don't respect him in any way, shape, or form. There's three. We've had Jericho. We've had, well, obviously, you know, the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and Hangman Page, but we've had a lot of people, Triple H, John Cena. John Cena cut a promo that was supposed to be a work, but in a way wasn't, when he said, you know, CM Punk says he wants to bring change to the WWE, and change is just code word for let's make CM Punk a star and forget about everybody else. Sometimes the truest words are spoken in jest like that, where you think, oh, they're only kidding, they're only play acting, they're only building up a feud. Maybe, maybe not. So when so many wrestlers, who really don't seem to have a problem with a lot of people, when's the last time you heard John Cena had a problem with a ton of people? I haven't. Time you heard AJ Styles had no respect for somebody. I haven't. Kevin Owens was another one who warned us about CM Punk. When's the last time you heard John Moxley mouth off about wrestlers who suck or he doesn't like? I haven't. So when this many people say something, and when CM Punk himself says anyone who has a problem with Jungle Boy, it's probably you who are the problem. Because he's so easy to get along with and such a nice guy. Oh, until he doesn't do what you want him to do. That's the issue. Same thing with Triple H. Triple H has been outspoken about some people, but Triple H has worked with a lot of people, including people he wasn't too thrilled with. And he had nothing good to say about CM Punk. Now, I hear the hatchet's been buried there. Probably has. Probably has. Because now he's a businessman, he's not in the ring anymore, things are different. But when this many people might have a problem with you, I think CM Punk's own words are very prophetic when he says, maybe it's you who are the problem.
Yeah, maybe it is you who are the problem, and that's the thing. If you think about it, I mean, if he said, I mean, apparently he did say what he said about Jungle Boy. I mean, and this is, and then he comes back and says, well, I mean, you could make the argument, well, I'm running the show and this, that, and the other, and it's my show, and I think it's too dangerous. But then again, Jungle Boy wanted to do it, and he said no, you know, and I mean, I guess Jungle Boy might have pulled something on him. But again, this is the same guy that we know what kind of guy this guy is. This guy didn't think it was a big enough match to fill to face Triple H at WrestleMania, right? So this is that. This is the same kind of guy. I mean, he's very much soft. He's very much a hypocrite. He's very much, you know, there are reasons why guys like he would never face a guy like Brock Lesnar. Not just because he's small, because Brock Lesnar would break him in half and beat him to a pulp if he tried some of that shit against him, right? So, yeah, this is a guy that just nobody likes.
Very few people seem to be able to get along with him, and those people are normally the people who won't give him any competition because they're tag team people, or they're people who are past their prime and not going to really give him any kind of a run in the ring. He doesn't seem to be able to deal with the fact that there are viable people in the ring who are as popular. That's always been a problem. So now the question is, the WWE has said on many occasions, many, many, many occasions, we have a policy that we work with just about anybody if we can. We give the fans what they want. They worked with the Warrior after the Warrior held Vince McMahon up for money. They worked with Bret Hart after Bret Hart physically attacked Vince McMahon. They re-signed Jeff Jarrett after Jeff Jarrett held up Vince McMahon for money. So the WWE does have a history of hiring people back who they claimed were terrible to them, did terrible things to them, and that they would never work with again. So now the question is, would they, especially with this new Endeavor deal, would they consider hiring back CM Punk? Well, here's the issue. Can you trust him if you do? I think this is the real issue. CM Punk did some things that the Warrior did not do, Jeff Jarrett did not do, and Bret Hart did not do. Bret Hart made his intentions very clear. I'm not dropping the belt to Shawn Michaels, which is a mistake. A lot of people took the wrong side of that feud too and said, oh, well, they should have never screwed Bret Hart out of the belt. They didn't screw Bret Hart out of a belt. Bret Hart doesn't own that belt. Bret Hart was handed that belt by virtue of booking. A promoter said, in this case, Vince McMahon, I want you to be the champion. That same promoter said, you're leaving. I want you to drop the championship to the person I deem the next champion. And that person said, no. That's unreasonable. You're leaving. It means nothing. You didn't win anything. You were handed. So Bret Hart's screw job was of his own making. He refused to do what the boss said, so they said, okay, well, we're just going to take it, and they took it. Now, many people say that was unprofessional. Well, it's more unprofessional for a worker to refuse to do what the boss says, especially if you're leaving the job anyway, and especially if that boss helped negotiate your deal and you got a ton of money. So I do not blame Vince McMahon for that. I blame Bret Hart. But they hired Bret Hart back. They buried the hatchet. They buried the hatchet with Jeff Jarrett, who basically said, my contract technically is over before the pay-per-view, so if you want me to go out there and lose to China, you better come up with a sack full of money. That's extortion. And Vince McMahon allegedly told him, I'm going to give you this money, but you will never, ever work for this company again. That wasn't true. They hired him back. Vince McMahon himself said about the Ultimate Warrior, when he did what he did and basically held us up for money, I couldn't wait until the match was over to fire him. I couldn't wait. I was waiting backstage. As soon as that match was over, I told him, you're done, get out of here. But he hired him back. So is it unreasonable to think that they might give CM Punk a chance. Well, I'll tell you, I'm not as confident that the answer is no as I was. Initially, I said they'll never do it because Triple H is totally against it, and one of their top performers, Seth Rollins, is against it. Initially, that was my feeling. Then I heard that they had buried the hatchet with Triple H, and I said, well, let me consider this for a minute. Would they take a shot, especially now that their Endeavor deal is full-blown, would they take a shot at this in an attempt to rub it in AEW's face or an attempt to create some controversy or whatever? And I'm still on the side of saying probably not. But here's why. Here's my reasoning. With Bret Hart, cooler heads eventually prevailed. Bret Hart had a stroke. Bret Hart understood very clearly he was never coming back to wrestle full time. It was just a position where he was going to come in and do a little this or a little that. I think when real life things happen like that, sometimes you bury the hatchet, and maybe Bret Hart realized I probably should have dropped the belt, and Vince McMahon said maybe there was a better way I could have done this, and they just decided, you know what, it's not worth keeping the feud going. With Jeff Jarrett, again, time marched on. There was years between that, years and years between that, and eventually Vince McMahon's position softened. I wouldn't say you'll never see CM Punk in a wrestling ring again, but maybe not as a performer in the WWE. Maybe they're not going to do that. Now, when he was doing the Fox show, that had nothing to do with the WWE. That had to do with Fox. And even then, the WWE said he had to be monitored very closely. The difference between holding somebody up for money backstage where nobody knows about it and taking a live microphone where you're supposed to not say certain things and literally just go off and say them are two different things. And if CM Punk were to do that while Endeavor is the owners of this company, that would be bad. Really, really bad. And if he was to say things about certain performers back there, it's not going to take the Young Bucks kicking in a door or Kenny Omega in a hallway or Jack Perry. There's going to be people in that dressing room who are going to solve that situation. Having said that, I'm not 100% sure they won't. I was before, but I'm not now. I don't think they'd give him a big run. I don't think they'd do this CM Punk's going to be the champion type thing. I don't think they'd do that. But do I think that they would possibly bring him back in some capacity? I think it's possible. I honestly think it's possible. I recommend you do not. Because this is a guy who does not learn from his mistakes. If you remember, when CM Punk was let go from AEW originally, Mike, he was brought back under the condition that everybody was going to be peaceful. Wasn't going to start no more problem. No more of that kind of stuff. And one of the first things he did was grab a microphone and shoot on Adam Page after the show was over and say a bunch of things that he was not supposed to say, and then insist that Adam Page be banned from the building so that he couldn't retaliate in any way, shape, or form. That doesn't sound like somebody who's recalcitrant and somebody who learned from their mistakes. It sounds like someone who just doesn't think they ever make a mistake.
Absolutely. You're right on that. And look, there are people, if he runs afoul of AJ Styles or somebody like that, AJ Styles is going to take care of that stuff. I'm working on the fact that they put everything Triple H and Vince have buried the hatchet and all that stuff. Now, if he wants a slight run, maybe they sign him to a deal like Edge had. You do a couple of matches a year. Maybe you do some commentary, that type of thing, right? Where you do that, and then you, But you're going to have to tell him one thing, one stipulation is you got to come in better shape. You got to make sure you're in better shape. You got to make sure you look the part, you know. And so, and that was our big problem with him in AEW. And other than the fact that if they feel like they can control him, then by all means do it. But people being able to control CM Punk
has a weird way of doing that too, though, Mike. They have a weird way of making you look better than you look. You know what I mean? Like, I've watched other WWE performers leave the WWE and go to different, whether it be Impact or AEW, and they look different. They don't look quite the same way as they did in a WWE ring. I'm not talking about performance-wise. I'm talking about physically. The WWE has a way of making you look different. I don't know what they do. I mean, it might be makeup or hairstyle or out design. I don't know what it is. But the WWE tends to make you look better physically. So I have no doubt that CM Punk could get himself into shape. My real concern is this. Now that Endeavor is the company, Todd, they run UFC. CM Punk did not endear himself to UFC either. A lot of the UFC performers were very, very upset that CM Punk got a main event on a card where they busted their ass. And he was virtually a nobody that didn't have really any MMA skills to speak of. I don't think he endeared himself with a lot of MMA guys. He didn't talk trash about them, but I think they felt he was upstaging. And I know Dana White had come to the conclusion he will never work for UFC again. Dana White said that. Didn't belong here to begin with. He's not working for us anymore. So now, is it less likely that they hire him, or do you think it's more likely because maybe they want that, I don't know, maybe they want that caveat of we've hired him back and, you know, he'll be a big deal, even though I think what Mike said is true. I don't think he'll be in ring. I don't think he'll be a huge deal. I think it'll be much more like an Edge thing here and there, maybe doing some commentary, maybe doing some skits or backstage stuff, but I don't see CM Punk as a full-time performer in WWE if they did hire him back.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, if they bring CM Punk back to the WWE, you know, like you said, they could make him an agent or something, or maybe an NXT trainer or something like that, not a full-time performer on camera.
Yeah, I mean, if they got a spot for him, but again, would CM Punk accept that? Now, what I was hearing is that CM Punk, before he was hired back to AEW, was very much trying to get back in the WWE, and they said no. Now, if those reports turn out to be true, then I think his chances are very slim. Because if they said no then, I don't know why they'd say yes now, when he's actually got more water under his bridge. You could make some argument. It's not a good argument, but you could make some argument that the situation the first time wasn't totally CM Punk's fault. I went on record as saying, I don't think the Young Bucks, being executive vice president, should have ever went to that dressing room. They should have went to Tony Khan and said, I want to have a sit-down meeting with CM Punk. And you're going to tell him that we are the executive vice presidents of this company, and he is going to respect that. Instead, they lost their temper. They acted more like workers than they were executive vice presidents, and I don't think that was the right thing to do. But I think 75% of it was CM Punk's fault. No one told him to turn a media scrum into his own personal pulpit to voice all of his discontent with the company that's signing his paycheck. No one told him to do that. He did that all on his own. And if the WWE feels like he could do that again, and I think CM Punk thinks that's the only thing that makes him CM Punk. See, I think this is the problem. Do I think CM Punk is a dumb guy who doesn't get it? No, I think he's sharp as a tack. I think he understands very clearly, I don't have a lot left to give in the ring. I don't have the look I had. I'm not a young man anymore. What I do have is my reputation, and my reputation is I say things and do things nobody else will. I'm this ultimate rebel who you can never quite pin down to what I might do. And so he's like the Howard Stern of broadcasting, where he has to do something outrageous. Even if it's not in the script, he doesn't get attention. So when he says, I won't do any of those things, you can count on the fact that he will. Because he has to. If he doesn't, then he becomes boring. And I think he understood that very clearly. His first run, when the ratings did not go up after his initial hiring. And he realized, I got to do something. And he used the media scrum to do it. He never thought the Young Bucks would come knocking on that door. And he thought the big talk would be CM Punk calls out the Young Bucks right in front of Tony Khan. And CM Punk's so outrageous, he'll say anything. He didn't think it was going to lead to that fight. He didn't think anybody was going to challenge him. He thought he would get away with being controversial and saying stuff he shouldn't say. And that helps his hype, and that helps his reputation, and that helps him sell merchandise. But he didn't get away with it. Then he came back and said he wasn't going to do it anymore, and I think he quickly figured out nobody cares unless I do it. Used to be a rock performer. His name was G.G. Allin. He was a punk rock musician, slash metal, but mostly punk rock. And truth be told, before he became the infamous G.G. Allin, he was in a band that was fairly normal. And then, whether you believe the hype that he dropped acid and went nuts or whatever happened, he became this insane man who rolled in ground glass on stage, urinated on the audience, defecated on stage, did the most outrageous run out nude, beat people up in the audience with a microphone stand, attempted to rape people in the audience. And this is for real. He really did these things. And later on in his life, when he was, before he died, he's dead now, I think he began to realize it's not a matter of I even want to anymore. I think initially he wanted to. He wanted to be that crazy man of punk rock, the one that's so unpredictable that you're almost afraid to go see him. I mean, this is a man who literally said, I'm not going to tell you what concert, but at one concert, I'm going to kill myself and everybody in the audience. That's what he said. That's the way I'm going to go out. So when you attend the concert, fully understand it may be the last thing you do in life. Because one of these concerts, that's my intention. That's how crazy this guy was. But the last album he made started to sound a little more normal. And he was starting to cool some of the stuff he did on stage. He was still outrageous, quite as. And he was starting to lose attention. Because, you see, if you don't do those crazy things, when that's your reputation, you lose your reputation. CM Punk's reputation is he says outlandish things and drops pipe bombs on all the performers. And if he doesn't do that, he doesn't get that attention. And AEW ratings were showing he wasn't getting that attention. So, Mike, I think if you hire CM Punk, you clearly got to understand he is going to do this again.
Yeah, he clearly is. And look, they already have a commentator who says that type of stuff, and that's Corey Graves. He's not really good at it. I think Punk would be better at it than Corey Graves is. But again, When Ozzy Osbourne bit the head off of a bat, he only did it once, right? He never did it again.
You're absolutely right. And once again, going back to the G.G. Allin reference, who, if you're a punk rock fan, you really should look him up because he's an interesting character. Do I believe that at some point he was really going to kill himself and the whole audience? No, I don't. He was a self-mutilator, and he had absolutely no shame. He absolutely did defecate and urinate on stage. He did beat people up in the audience. He did try to rape women in the audience. And when confronted about it, basically said, well, they know what I do. Why do they come? If you're in the audience and you're in the first few rows where you know I can get to you, you damn sure know that you're in danger, so don't come or stay in the back. You're asking for it. You already know me. It's not like it's a surprise. So you obviously want it. But I don't think it was – I think he thought this is the way to continue my madman persona because I never said what day, so I could just simply say, well, it's not this one. It's not that one. It's not this one. So – I think CM Punk is a little bit like him. He needs to do that outrageous pipe bomb, I'm shooting from the hip sort of thing, I'm not listening to management, I go against the grain, because he knows that's all he's got. If he were a better worker, he would not need to. Now, Kevin Sullivan was recently quoted, and again, Kevin Sullivan's a guy responsible for that ridiculous WCW debacle, the Faces of Fear or whatever it was. It was just horrible. So, but Kevin Sullivan's also responsible for his great satanic gimmick in Florida wrestling. Kevin Sullivan said, if you put that show, Collision, in the hands of Daniel Bryan, then you're going to get some. It shouldn't have been in the hands of CM Punk to begin with. It should have been in the hands of Daniel Bryan because Daniel Bryan understands wrestling. Daniel Bryan is someone who creates outside the box. Daniel Bryan, somebody who understands wrestling needs to be a continuing episodic thing and not just random matches every week. And he's also willing to put other people over and do the right thing. So he says, give it time, give it a couple of weeks or months. And if Daniel Bryan is given the exact same position that CM Punk was given on Collision, Collision's ratings will go up. I believe him. I believe him. Because when I heard that CM Punk was taking over Collision, I already knew it was going to be the CM Punk show. He's going to be the champion. All the other matches aren't going to have great storylines because he's going to want his storyline to be the best one, and so it's going to be basically the only one that counts. He's all about himself and always was. Daniel Bryan is not. Daniel Bryan does, in fact, understand what makes wrestling tick. And while he may not be the type of guy who goes for outlandish angles like a Bray Wyatt angle or a crazy, you know, over-the-top angle, he does understand the psychology. He does understand the importance of a strong storyline and very strong character. And since he can't work full-time in the ring anymore, doesn't want to, one of the two, handing the reins to Daniel Bryan could potentially, Mike, be the smartest move Tony Khan ever made since he started AEW.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think one of the dumber ones was kind of cutting bait with Cody. Because, I mean, and we've talked about that before, how, you know, I've speculated that Cody, once, they didn't cut bait with Cody until they hired Punk the first time, until after they hired and fired Punk the first time, right? So, or hired him the first time, whatever. I mean, after they hired Punk, they ended up taking away Cody's power to book, at the book and some of his writing duties and such, along with his wife's duties. But anyway, yeah, this is a guy, you can't do any better than Daniel Bryan. Yeah, he got involved with Bray Wyatt one time, but that was a logical thing. He looked like the guys, and we know that whole angle where they took him and they looked like they brainwashed Daniel Bryan and all that stuff. Right? That was the angle, right? And basically, Bray Wyatt was Kevin Sullivan. That was the angle.
Yeah.
I mean, basically. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, right. So, you got that going on, yeah. Daniel Bryan, Watch. Give Daniel Bryan 3 months. And watch what happens.
Well, I can tell you this. I'm much more likely to watch Collision if you tell me Daniel Bryan is in charge than I would have been with CM Punk. Because I think Daniel Bryan clearly understands what I need to do is to focus on making future stars, making people household names that right now are not. Focus on the future, not on 44-year-old people. And that's what I want to see out of AEW. And that's what I've always wanted to see out of AEW. I fully understood that you have to hire a couple of guys who's going to draw. So when they hired Jericho, I was like, that's a good move. When they hired Swagger and they hired a couple other WWE former guys, I said, okay, that's fine. But then they went nuts though, and they hired anybody they could get their hands on. And it went too far. It got to the point where you had more ex-WWE guys than you had any kind of talent that was young and possibly up and coming. And really all you ever got out of it, all you ever really got out of it, you got some promise in Sammy Guevara, and it faded very quickly. You got some promise in Darby Allin, and that faded very quickly. And you ended up with MJF, which is fine, but it's going to fade if you don't do something with it. Now, they're doing as much as they can, I guess, but again, you have to walk a thin line with that because it's going to get old. That kind of thing gets old after a while. By now, 4 years in, they should have top name guys that are homegrown, if not homegrown, but people who weren't top name guys before. And I mean people who are drawing big. They don't. They still got to rely on ex-WWE talent. They still got to rely on a CM Punk. They still got to rely on a Daniel Bryan. They still got to rely on a Chris Jericho or a Matt Hardy or a Miro. They still got to rely on those people. The only one they've got, really, is MJF, to show you they are not creating stars. They've had, again, it's not going to happen in a month, but you've had 4 years. Show me your star. Darby Allin's in the same place he always was. He hasn't moved one iota up the ladder than he ever was. And in fact, I would argue he's moved down. Sammy Guevara, same thing. You haven't elevated them. You've elevated MJF, which is fine. He's definitely your blue chip. But now even him, you got to hook him up with Adam Cole and everybody else and CM Punk to try to give him the rub. Why does he need the rub by now? You should have already had these guys in place. Right now, your headliners should be Darby Allin, Sammy Guevara, MJF. Those should be headliners. Because by now, you should have made them headliners. Instead, you've kind of kept them on a treadmill, Todd, and, you know, that's not going to be successful.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about AEW, and they're falling into a WCW trance, bringing ex-WWF stars at the time. They're trying to pull an Eric Bischoff. That's one of the things that WCW died of, bringing. People who, like, leftovers.
Yeah, I think that's a part of the problem, Mike, is you've had, what have they got to show for?
Absolutely. Now, you know, I mean, yeah, and look, I think Jack Perry, before this, I think, because remember, they were talking about the four pillars of AEW at one point: MJF, Darby Allin, Jack Perry, and Sammy Guevara. Right? Those were the four pillars, and three of those four have kind of taken a step backwards, have kind of regressed, you know. And who knows when Jack Perry's going to be back, you know? If at all. Now, without Punk there, I think there's more of a chance that Perry, this indefinite suspension, is just that it's a suspension, it's not a firing. But we'll see when that comes up again, you know. We'll see when cooler heads start to prevail what they do with Jack Perry, right? So so there's that. And as far as the way the WWE films is, does makes their athletes look good. You know what? I look at how Naomi looks in Impact right now, Marcus. She looks very good. She looks like she's in fairly decent shape. Now she's highly athletic, but she's kind of changed her style a little bit, kind of more of a submission style. She doesn't do the rear view all that often, but again, it's almost looking at this in the mirror at the same woman that was there before the whole shitstorm with Mercedes Moné, you know?
Well, yes and no. Yes, she looks like she's in the same physical shape. But when I see her, I don't see superstar. She doesn't look like a superstar. You know, it's almost like in the music business. You get these people and you're like, okay, well, when they were a local band, they looked this way. And then when they get onto a major record label, you're like, whoa, look how they look now. Look at the Bangles. You know, go back and look at the Bangles' first album that was released on a minor label. And what did they look like? They look like a bunch of typical girls in a band. They didn't look particularly like sex symbols or anybody, whatever. They looked like maybe they were like a folk sort of a band. And when a record label got a hold of them, holy cow, Susanna Hoffs became a huge sex symbol. And if you listen to her story, somewhat against her will, they said, this is the way you're going to grow your hair. This is the way you're going to dress. This is the way you're going to look. And bam. So when I see Naomi, you know, she used to come out with the green and she did the whole dance thing and the whole whatever. It just screamed superstar. Now it just screams, I'm a professional wrestler. And there's a difference. There's a difference. Sometimes your entrance can make you. Look at the Sandman. If the Sandman just walked to the ring and got in the ring and did what he did, he would never have been as popular. It was that entrance that made him a superstar. And, yeah, I mean, his overall craziness. But at the same time, Naomi could use a little more theatrics in Impact to be that superstar. WWE is very good at that. WWE is very good at making those guys look like they're superstars, both men and women, when they come down that aisle. Look at Shotzi. Shotzi had a very punk rock look, and she had the tank, and it was really cool. But something was missing. And they realized we blew it with her. She's supposed to be this crazy punk rock girl, almost like a Ruby Riott. Supposed to be this crazy punk rock girl who comes out in a tank and doesn't care about anything, and she's just, you know, like a wild, crazy whatever. And we blew it with her. She's lost too much. She's not a threat. We got to reinvent her. And even now, she still comes out with that same tank and everything, but now the look is totally different. It's like they hired a different person. It's like they hired a totally different person. And that totally different person has such a unique look that it could potentially make her a superstar. You see it now and then, where you say, man, they've rearranged this person's outfit, the way they look, their hairstyle, everything. And it's made them look like a superstar. So that's kind of what I'm talking about when it comes to the WWE making you look a certain way. They have this weird way of making you look super.
Right. And think about this. What did they do with Dominic Mysterio, right? Dominic Mysterio came up short hair, clean cut, you know, all-American looking boy, you know, that type of thing. But the attitude, the kind of smarminess didn't fit the look. Well, look at him now. The look, the longer hair, the way he carries himself, you know, the fact that, yeah, you may be right about that heat going away at some point, but not anytime soon, it looks like. So, I mean, just by a simple thing of changing how you carry yourself and how you look can make you a huge superstar, and that's what they've done with both Shotzi and Dominic Mysterio.
You know, Dominic is a good example. Dominic looked not too much like a superstar when he was with Rey. He just didn't have the overall appearance or ambiance of anything. He looked like a babyface kid who was following his dad around, who was trying to be in the wrestling business but probably didn't belong there. Well, that's gone. Look at Damian Priest. Punishment Martinez on the indies, he just looked like, okay, a reasonably tall, muscular type guy who might be a badass looking guy. But look at the outfits now. Look at the way they do his makeup, his eye liner, everything. They've totally transformed him into somebody that looks like a superstar. And when the WWE is at their best, they can do that. So could they do that and make CM Punk look a little more professional than he was over in AEW? Yeah. But now the question now isn't just, will they hire him back, CM Punk? The question is, what's AEW do for me? AEW came off a record-setting attendance in Wembley Stadium and went directly to the lowest-rated show they've had. They got no rub from it. They got no rub from it at all. And people are starting to realize there's not that many storylines, and the ones that are kind of weak, and there's just too many actors, and there's not enough time for everybody, and some of the matches seem very random and just, okay, you against you, there's no storyline, it doesn't matter. I think Daniel Bryan can correct that situation. And ironically, if they do give that collision to him, it may end up being more popular than their main show. I'd love to see that happen. To be honest, here's what I would love to see happen. It's not going to happen, but here's what I'd love to see happen. I would love to see Tony Khan say, look, I'm the money man here. Obviously, I'm the guy with the bucks. And I am the boss. And the buck stops with me. And you're going to have to clear everything with me before you do it. However, I'm not booking anything. I'm not qualified to book anything. I never was a booker. I've hired some people. One of them is Daniel Bryan. We're going to basically let them run this. You're going to see a different federation. Now, I warned everybody ahead of time, and I'm still going to warn you. And that, again, for the people who say I'm being unfair to CM Punk, you're not going to accomplish anything with the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega having a little kumbaya, this is our private little federation where our friends get over and we just have fun in a party. No. Someone has to take the bull by the horns. Cody Rhodes clearly saw the writing on the wall. You are not going to convince me that Cody Rhodes abandoned the company he actually created because, oh, well, I just wanted to prove myself in WWE. Bullshit. He was smart enough to see this is getting out of hand. The Bucks think they own everything and run anything. I'm hearing they're not even that close of friends anymore. The Bucks think they run and own everything. You're hiring CM Punk, he's going to be a disaster. Nobody's getting going anywhere. Everybody's on a treadmill. You just keep hiring new people and hiring new people and say, okay, well, his shelf life was 3 weeks. Now people are tired of him, so we're going to hire somebody else. And his shelf life is 3 weeks. Now we got to hire somebody else. He saw the writing on the wall. And he bailed. And I think he was damn smart to do it, Todd, because it's still business as usual in AEW. And where would Cody be if he was in there?
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, if Cody was still in AEW, he's probably not going to be on the top of the card. They're probably going to make him be like bottom of the card, lower, pre-mid card. That's how it would probably work with that if he was still with AEW.
Yeah, this would not have worked out. I think Cody saw, Mike, that the inmates were running the asylum and things were about to go from bad to worse, and his instincts could not have been better.
Yeah, and his instincts could not be better. And here's something else to think about. If it's true that they've given the show to Daniel Bryan, think about one little aspect of the show that happened last night. What was one little aspect of the show that happened last night? That aspect was a lot of C.J. Perry's interview about being a manager, right?
Yeah.
So if Daniel Bryan's in charge, he definitely knows the fans want C.J. Perry and Miro to be together. Now, Miro, they're playing the whole thing about Miro being a loner and all that stuff. But he knows that. Daniel Bryan knows that. And if he is in charge and he knows that, he's going to do the slow burn to where they're going to get back together and people are going to watch this show on a weekly basis to see what happens with Miro and Lana, you know? If Daniel Bryan's in charge.
That's absolutely correct. And then factor in this. When have you ever heard, I've not heard one person, when have you ever heard a worker say, yeah, I don't like Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan rubs me the wrong way. Daniel Bryan's an egomaniac. Daniel Bryan's selfish. Daniel Bryan's unsafe. Daniel Bryan says, when have you ever heard anybody say that? I've never heard it. Every time Daniel Bryan's name is mentioned, whether you're an old-school guy from the 70s or you're a brand-new rookie, says, oh, yeah, Daniel Bryan's great. Well, if you're universally – this is the opposite of CM Punk. If you're universally loved by your coworkers and even people who really don't know you that well, then it's likely you're very good at what you do and you're a nice guy. If you're universally hated like CM Punk, then it's probably the opposite. Daniel Bryan has the potential to have people – put it this way. If I were a wrestler and I was hired in AEW and you told me you can go to CM Punk's show and work or Daniel Bryan's show, I'm going to Daniel Bryan's. And it's not even close. So now you may have the potential for some of these workers to say, oh, if Daniel's running the ship, I'm in. Because I know how good he is at what he does. And I know I can come to him with a problem. And I know he's good at, solving situations and making sure everybody's whatever. He's not going to be CM Punk. I think it's a very smart move. So I'm actually optimistic about AEW. Right now, they are going through some rough time. Here's why. Not because you fired CM Punk. It's because now you have the reputation of being a very unprofessional company who can't control its workers, who can't guarantee the safety of its workers, who can't guarantee the safety of even owners and management, and who doesn't even have the respect of the workers enough that they will follow what you ask them to do when they get on that microphone. I think Tony Khan firing CM Punk was a warning sign to everybody. He is our top merchandise seller. He's arguably the top name in the company, and he's gone. So if you're thinking that you can get away with any of this, you're going to be gone too. So this sends a direct message to everybody. Doesn't matter who you are, whether you're, basically sitting at catering most nights or you're our top guy. You'll be gone too. We're not putting up with this anymore. Maybe this is a good thing. Now Tony Khan's next move, if it is giving Daniel Bryan the show, is also a very, very positive thing. Now, to be honest with you, and I know a lot of AEW fans are going to vilify me for this, Tony Khan has got to pull a Vince McMahon. He's got to let some people go. Your roster is way overcrowded, even for the three shows you have. It's just way overcrowded. It's way, way over the top. Focus on the people you most think are going to be your future. Here's the people who are not going to be your future. Chris Jericho is not going to be your future. Samoa Joe is not going to be your future. Matt Hardy is not going to be your future. Daniel Bryan's not even going to be your future. You need to focus on your future. Think you can re-sign MJF, and by now you really should know whether you can or you can't. He's not even going to be your future. You need to find your future. Sting's not going to be your future. You need to find those guys. You already should have done this. You've had 4 years. We gave you a year gratis, then a year and a half, then 2 years. It's 4 years, and I don't see it. This should have been the very first thing you do, the very first thing. And you have the talent. Darby Allin has the talent. Sammy Guevara has the talent. MJF has the talent. There's a lot of guys you have over there that have the talent, and they have the charisma. But you didn't handle them right. And the reason you didn't handle them right is you were too busy trying to promote the old WWE guys so that people would watch your show. There's got to be a happy medium. And there wasn't a happy medium for a long time, Mike, and now they're paying the price for it.
Right, and look, here's the deal. Even to some extent, he's you know, on indefinite suspension. But even to some extent, you could say that Jack Perry is kind of he's young enough, he's athletic enough, he's good enough on the mic, you know. And I like that they finally turned him heel, you know, and that type of thing. You know, guys like Christian need to. I love what they're doing with Christian, but he needs to go. Probably, I mean, I've heard rumors about Jake Roberts wanting to go back to the WWE at some point and do something, but you know, we'll see about that. And I mean, we basically know who the top of the top in the women's division over there is as well. And to tell you the truth, I love her gimmick, but we've said it before about Dr. Britt Baker. She needs to be in the WWE. I'm sorry. She just does.
Yeah, again, what Tony Khan needs to do now is hire some people who clearly understand how to create new superstars. Now, that person would be Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman did that better than anybody in the history of professional wrestling. Paul Heyman took people who, A, weren't very good wrestlers, B, nobody ever heard of in their life, and C, weren't exactly the most perfect employee, and turned them into superstars where everybody knew their name. Everybody knew who the Sandman was. Everybody knew who Tommy Dreamer was. Everybody knew who Taz was. Everybody knew who the gangsters were and Public Enemy. Everybody knew. And occasionally he'd have a guy come in that was, you know, a WWE guy or somebody that was a little more famous, but like a Terry Funk. But he didn't bow and scrape to them. He used them to get his guys more notoriety. If you can get the Sandman, who I love, by the way, I'm not trying to disparage the Sandman in any way. Of all of the professional wrestlers that I've met in my life, and I've met a lot of them, Sandman was one of the nicest. He was entertaining. He was articulate. He was fun. He genuinely cared about his fans. But let's face it. He's no professional wrestler. And he was over big time. Huge. Huge. The roof come on glued when he would come out. If Paul Heyman could do that, he could do that with other people who have the talent. Paul Heyman's very good at that, but Paul Heyman's not going anywhere. So you need your own Paul Heyman. You need to find someone. The one person that no one seems to have any interest in signing for a creative deal is Raven, and I just don't know why. Almost everyone you talk to says very, very creative mind, understands psychology of wrestling better than anybody else that I know. Why is he not there? Why is he not there? Because maybe one or two people have a beef with him, or one or two people don't think he's their caliber of wrestler. Well, I got news. You don't have to be any caliber of wrestler. Freddie Prinze Jr. never wrestled in his life, and he was a writer. By the way, there's another guy who has nothing good to say about CM Punk. Add William Regal to that list, too. He has nothing good to say about CM Punk. So, yeah, if you hired him to do some creative, I think that would be great. Tony Khan can't do it. And the Road Dogg and whoever else they got or had, they can't do it either. It's obvious they can't do it. You've been given 4 years and they didn't do it, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, like you said with about AEW, they need their Paul Heyman as a writer or something. And you know, like you said, they got to do something with their writing staff and everything, and their executive vice president. They need like something more experienced.
They need somebody creative. That's just as simple as that. And they need somebody who can take a look at these characters and say, what do they need to be superstars and not just workers? Simple as that. Now, Derek is saying, you really think they take the chance on CM Punk saying something really bad or whatever? You know, I don't know. I think it's 50-50. I mean, you could write it in his contract. You could say, if you go off script and say anything disparaging about this company, its inner workings, its management, or anything else, your contract is null and void, you get no money. And then he probably wouldn't do it. How could he? You could put in, if you get into one locker room altercation, your first fine is going to be $100,000. He's not going to do it. Now, the thing about Seth Rollins is Seth Rollins said a whole bunch of bad things about CM Punk. However, said a whole bunch of bad things about Matt Riddle, too. And then said, but I'll still work with him. I don't like him. I don't like the way he does business. I don't like the way he conducts himself. I don't like his personality. But I'll still work with him, and he worked with him well. So I'm not 100% sure you couldn't convince Seth Rollins that, you know, if your paths really don't cross so much, is it a big deal to bring him back? I would say you could probably convince Seth Rollins. Now, Derek's saying, well, CM Punk really doesn't care. Well, see, this is where he bluffs people. CM Punk does care. He cares about CM Punk. He cares about his money. That's why whenever he's fired, he does the lawsuit. I'm suing. I'm suing to get my money, to get my money, to get my money. That's what he cares about is his money. Otherwise, he wouldn't sue. He'd just be like, whatever. I can go find work somewhere else. F you. Uh-uh. It's always suing for my money, suing for my money. He wants that money. Okay. Well, then you put your money where your mouth is, and you sign a contract that says you're not doing X, Y, and Z, or you're not getting any of this money. Then I might take a chance on him. The problem with CM Punk, though, is the same one that Mike identified. It's not just worrying about, is he going to get into a backstage altercation? Is he going to say something that he should not say on the microphone? Is he going to isolate the dressing room? The other concern is, and I'm just being honest, whether he's a legit judo expert or whatever he claims to be, I don't know. All I know is when you put him in the ring against someone, he looks frail. And how many times has he been injured? So obviously, John Moxley's right when he says his body has become frail. He's always hurt. Notch wrestlers aren't always hurt. How many times has CM Punk been hurt in AEW and WWE? Quite a bit. So then you've got that to contend with, too. You got a guy who looks a little bit frail, doesn't look like he's you know, the way he left WWE doesn't look like that CM Punk. He looks like a much older, much lighter, more frail CM Punk, Mike. And, you know, you put him up against, what are you going to do, put him up against Bobby Lashley? What's that going to look like?
Absolutely, and that's the thing. I mean, you have a bunch of bigger – I mean, look, Bobby Lashley, Omos, Braun Strowman, to name a few, right? You know, you put them up against those guys, Lesnar as well, yeah. And that's the thing. Now, I won't go back to what we were talking about earlier with the creative side of AEW. Everybody knows that Freddie Prinze Jr. worked for the WWE. Everybody knows that Freddie Prinze Jr. Is trying to start his own company. What would stop Tony Khan from going to Freddie Prinze Jr. and saying to Freddie Prinze Jr., yeah, go ahead and go get Scott Levy. All right, fine, whatever. But go pay Freddie Prinze Jr. not to create his own company, but to come work for you.
It wouldn't be the worst hire in the world, I can tell you that. It wouldn't be the worst hire in the world. I know there's a lot of fans are going to disagree with us and say, oh, you got to have a former wrestler. Not really. Not really. If you're a fan, you know what you want to see. You should know what you want to see. And if you're a super fan who's watched your whole life, you're damn sure know what you want to see. So how hard is it to say, well, I know what I want to see. And if I want to see it, there's a really good chance that a majority of wrestling fans want to see it. No better indication of than what the WWE did Friday night. You had the Judgment Day in the ring. They just beat the Brawling Brutes. And Bobby Lashley's new conglomerate, whatever it's called, hits the ring. Now, I'm going to tell you, beyond any shadow of a doubt, they were supposed to be heels. They were supposed to be the bad guys. They were supposed to be a modern version of I don't know whether it was going to be the Nation of Domination or whether it was going to be MVP's old group, but that's what they were supposed to be. WWE called an audible and said, you guys are getting cheered. Fans are chanting Lashley. Forget it. We're not going to make another mistake and try to make you boo them. You want to cheer them? Cheer them. We'll put them against the Judgment Day. And you heard that crowd. It's not hard to do. I've said this on this show. I can't count the time. But I'll say it one more time. Wrestling creation is not hard to do. The people who tell you it's very tough, it's a grueling thing. No, it's not. Maybe it is for you, because maybe you're not a fan. But all you really have to do is listen to the fans. If you would have listened to the fans when they were booing Roman, Roman would have been a heel a long time ago, and you would have got much more life out of him as a heel. If you were listening to the fans, you would have had a great Wyatt family feud with the Shield. If you were listening to the fans, you probably still would have Cesaro. But you don't listen to the fans. This time they did. This time they said, Lashley's guys are not working out as heels. They're not going to be heels. So let's just see what happens if we throw them up in the Judgment Day space. Let's see if the fans react positively to Lashley's crew or whether they react positively to the Judgment Day. It wasn't close. So now the WWE clearly understands we're going to have to make Lashley's crew not squeaky clean faces, but certainly fan favorites. And their main opponents are going to be heels. And I think that's a very smart move, Mike.
That is a very smart move. And if the first feud thing is going to be against the Judgment Day, then they're going to absolutely have to have a woman in the group to counteract, Rhea Ripley, right? You know?
Yep.
So, and here we go. Bianca Belair.
That's what it's going to be. I can guarantee you that's what it's going to be when she gets healthy again. I can guarantee you that's what it's going to be, and that's going to be interesting. Now let me tell you something they did that pisses me off Friday night. Asuka and Io Sky is a match that I would imagine if you're a real wrestling fan, you are salivating at the chance to see. To the point where you're saying, that should be a WrestleMania match, maybe. Or that should be a major pay-per-view match. Maybe the Royal Rumble. Something. This on SmackDown? You're going to put this where you're going to cut it with two or three commercial breaks? You are so underplaying this match. You have no idea how much you're underplaying this match. This isn't a SmackDown match. This is a pay-per-view match. They are not going to be able to put on the show you want them to put on with the time that you're going to give them on a SmackDown match. It's not going to happen. Now, my only hope is that it ends up with a no contest, and then they continue it at pay-per-view. But if this is a one-and-done, Todd, this is a very dumb decision.
Not just a dumb decision. It would be a stupid decision on the WWE's part. And like you said, if I would have saved that feud for like a Royal Rumble or maybe a Survivor Series or maybe a next year SummerSlam or even a WrestleMania, not a TV.
Yeah, I think it's a big mistake, Mike, unless it's just the tip of the iceberg and it's just going to be one of these matches that end in a double DQ or double count out or something, and they continue the feud. I think this is a big mistake if it's a one-off.
Right, and here's something else everybody's not thinking about here. There's always been that rumor that for at least 2 to 3 weeks now that what's her name? The other Japanese Sky Pirates. I'm blanking on her name now. Has re-signed with the WWE, right?
Yoshirai, yeah.
You know, and yes, and so if she's re-signed and they're just waiting to debut her, this whole match on next Friday and whenever it's going to be could just be a way, because we know that what's her name, Bayley and Dakota Kai are going to be with Io Sky. We know that, right? That's a numbers game. That's a numbers game. So why not have that numbers game play into it where they're, and everybody knows right now that they're not fans don't want to cheer, don't want to boo Asuka. They just don't, right? So why not play that, have them do some chicanery and stuff like that to where then you can reintroduce her and have her come save Asuka. And you got another person to help Asuka out fighting, you know, damage control.
My only hope is that this is either the beginning of a storyline, like you said, or it's not a one and done. It's just the tip of the iceberg to lead to a pay-per-view or a premium live event feud. If that's the case, okay. If not, then you're very, very short-sighted. Here's something else I hate. What in the blue hell are you doing with Jimmy Uso? I don't understand how you can kill the bloodline angle this badly. This makes a zero sense. You had everything going gangbusters. You even got to the point where Jimmy Uso verbatim said what we said he should say, which was, I tried to do what I did because I didn't want you turning into Roman. That makes perfect sense. What doesn't make perfect sense is that after Jimmy Uso clearly tells Jay, I realize you're mad at me. I'd be mad at me too. I told you why I did it, and that's why I did it. If you want to kick my head off, do it, if that makes us even. So he kicks his head off, and he's mad at him. He kicks his head off, and now he wants to go back to Roman? That does not make any sense. That does not make any sense at all. week he wasn't singing that song. Last week he told Solo, you know, nobody tells me what to do, right? I don't know where you're going with this, but you're killing it. You're destroying it. You're absolutely destroying it. Now, maybe your gimmick is Jimmy's going to pretend to want to be back in their good graces, and when push comes to shove, he's going to be the one that helps destroy the bloodline. But then that does not lead to Jay versus Jimmy. And I got another news flash for you. We've just seen Jimmy Uso get beat by AJ Styles. So it's not that big of a deal now if Jay Uso beats him. So that's a mistake. Now here's another mistake. What are you doing with the OC? They look like a bunch of clowns giggling backstage like they're 12-year-old boys at a birthday party. And you got AJ Styles telling them, I don't need you guys. Jesus Christ, they've just come back to the Federation. You told them you were going to do something serious with them, and now you're making them laughing stocks. Utter and complete laughing stocks. You literally had them say the line, I don't think you should get involved in bloodline business. Like they're scared of them. You think that's a good look? For Anderson and Gallows? Oh, dear, we better not get involved in bloodline business. We may have to run up against Solo and maybe Jimmy or Roman. They should be anxious. They should be nipping at the heels, saying, who the hell do those guys think they are? They don't run anything. We were the Bullet Club for how long, and we ran Japan. You think they're going to walk on us on Raw? Or SmackDown or anywhere we're at? No. Boy, that's bad. That is bad. If I was Anderson and Gallows, I'd take my walking papers again. Because, I mean, that is bad. Now, I don't know whether they got AJ going to turn heel or the OC going to turn heel on AJ. I don't know what they got planned, Mike, but whatever it is, I don't like it.
I don't like it either. And furthermore, when Paul Heyman, when Heyman and Solo showed up, then I don't care what AJ tells the OC, those other two guys should have shown up as well.
Yes. Absolutely. I don't understand what they're doing here, Todd, but it makes the OC look like they're afraid of the bloodline, and it also makes them look like they're not even serious about being a team or wrestlers.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, don't look good with the OC, and they're practically back there just for extras from catering.
Yeah, it's bad. These are not the same. This is not the same. You could have had something really good if you had them. Basically, I thought you were going to try to reform the Bullet Club there and say, this is what we are. You're just going to call it the OC instead, and they're going to be serious. Contenders. No, you've made him a joke. You made him a joke. Now let me give you a little bit of good news if you're an LA Knight fan. The fact that LA Knight had a moment backstage with Paul Heyman is huge. I know a lot of people say, well, it was no big deal. No, it was a big deal. Go talk to Sami Zayn, and Sami Zayn will tell you the first time they let me actually be in the ring. Not wrestling, but just in the ring with Roman Reigns. That's when I knew they were going to do something big with me. The first time they had me really interact with him one-on-one, I knew they were going to do something big with me because the WWE doesn't let you interact with their top, top people unless you're going to be one. Paul Heyman's one of their top, top people. He controls what's their biggest faction, Bloodline. And to interact with LA Knight, Mike, means there is something going to happen big with LA Knight. It could potentially be, we could get to an LA Knight versus Roman Reigns match.
Wow. And that would be an incredible, I mean, Roman's good on the mic, but what's his name is superb. Paul is superb on the mic. And those promos between Paul Heyman and LA Knight, priceless.
Yeah. It could be something big. It could be something big. And like I said, that is a tip-off. You will notice that not that many people have an interaction with Paul Heyman unless they're a top guy. Unless it's just like, oh, well, they're included in a small group of people. But a one-on-one interaction usually means they got something big planned for you. Sami Zayn said, I was supposed to be in and out of the bloodline. It's supposed to be a comedy gimmick for a couple of weeks. When I knew it wasn't going to be is when they let me interact with Roman and I said, this is going to be big. They wouldn't do this unless it's going to be big. And he was right. Well, I'm telling you that they would not have let the tension boil over there between LA Knight and Paul Heyman unless something's going to happen. So something is going to happen. Now, whether that's just LA Knight versus Solo or whether LA Knight versus Jimmy Uso, I don't know. But I know that LA Knight is on the verge of signing a long-term contract. It's a pretty decent contract. And from what I'm hearing, he's going to get a huge push. So I expect that he's going to be in a major storyline very, very soon. So if you're an LA Knight fan, then that's a very positive thing. Now, you know, I'm a big AJ Styles fan. But for the life of me, I cannot understand why you let him beat Jimmy Uso. I don't know whether the gimmick is you need us to succeed. Maybe that's the gimmick. If we don't accept you back in the bloodline, you're not going to be anything. Or I don't know whether the gimmick is he lost on purpose because he wants to work his way back into their good graces and then destroy from within. I don't know. But you better have something on the back burner. Because if you got somebody built up, this would be like Gunther losing to somebody prior to him losing to somebody big. Oh, wow, I lost to Otis, but the big match is me and Cody. Well, that's not going to work. It's not going to work. You've killed it. You can't do that. Now, I'm not saying that AJ Styles isn't a big name, but I'm saying if you've got Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso penciled in for WrestleMania, which is what I was told, then Jimmy Uso should be on fire. And if AJ Styles was already mad at the OC, I don't know why you didn't have a thing where the OC came down, tried to stop Solo from maybe interfering, and in the pandemonium that happened, AJ gets pinned. It protects AJ, and at the same time, it furthers the tension between him and the OC, and it saves Jimmy the pin, Mike. So, I mean, you'd think that would be obvious.
Right. And furthermore, with this whole OC thing, you go back when they were doing their interview and you look at what they were wearing. They weren't wearing OC shirts. They were wearing the Good Brothers.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. So something's up. Not sure exactly what, but something, Todd. And, you know, I guess we'll see in the coming weeks, but I'm not so sure I'm going to like the direction that's heading.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this is, like you said, this is, could be like a heel turn for Gallows and Anderson. And that turn on AJ Styles along with Mia Yim too, and they could, all three could turn on AJ Styles and be like, we're not helping you.
That could be where it's leading. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. It's a little bit weird to just, if that's what you're going to do and you're going to make Anderson and Gallows the heels, I'm not sure they should be afraid of the bloodline. I think instead of saying, but AJ, we're the ones who told you don't get involved in bloodline business because they're so big and bad and powerful, we don't want to deal with them. No, then in that case, if I was going to make them the heels, then I would have said to AJ, well, AJ, I mean, at the end of the day, you've always been the leader. You can handle yourself. You can't handle Solo. You need three people to handle Solo or Jimmy. You weren't attacked 3-on-1. You were attacked 1-on-1. I mean, you're just not the leader you used to be. the old AJ Styles would have put that guy in his place, and he wouldn't have needed us to do it. So maybe you better look in the mirror and ask yourself if you're the same guy that we knew in Japan, because the guy we knew in Japan wouldn't have needed us for backup to deal with one dude. Then you would have said, okay, maybe they're turning heels and or whatever. The way they're making them out to be, they're almost sissies, Mike. So if they turn heel, what's the big deal?
Yeah, what's the big deal? And furthermore, if you would have done it the way you said to do it, then you come back and you can have them look for a new leader, and guess who just freshly turned heel?
Exactly. Exactly. That's my point. You could have had so much of a storyline behind that. So much of a storyline. There's so many branches on that tree, but all of it centers around them being afraid of the bloodline, and that's dumb. If you're literally afraid of the bloodline, you shouldn't be in wrestling. You should not be in wrestling. But you got the Judgment Day being brave. I mean, if you wanted the Judgment Day to be afraid of the bloodline, okay, they're bad guys too. So if they want to be cowards, fine. No, the Judgment Day is like, oh, we run this place now, not the bloodline. So they're not one bit afraid of the bloodline. See what I mean? You're making the heels brave and, you know, we'll stand up to everybody, and you're making the faces cowards. That's a bad look. It's a bad look. I don't like it. Now, you might have saved Grayson Waller's career, because Grayson Waller was basically if you ordered the Miz on Wish. And I think hooking him up with Austin Theory as a legitimate team might actually work. Now, this is a downgrade for Austin Theory. I mean, this was the chosen guy, I think. He was going to go right to the top. Now, if you're going to make him a tag team guy, that's certainly not going right to the top. But they actually do make a pretty good tag team together. And they actually do use the mic well together. They have a lot of chemistry together. LA Knight was very funny confronting them both. You might have something here. I mean, the tag team division is starting to look pretty good. You've got the Street Profits and their new gimmick. That's good. Obviously, you have Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. That's very strong because you lost the Usos. You're starting to have pretty Deadly is back. You've got the New Day back. Obviously, you've got the Brawling Brutes. The Viking Raiders have a couple of wins now. You're starting to have a pretty decent tag team division. So if you add them to the tag team division, yeah, I'm okay with that. And it's probably the best thing to happen to Grayson Waller, although, again, Mike, probably not to Austin Theory.
Yeah, not too good for Austin Theory. I still think Austin Theory has some potential to be the next big thing, but we'll see on that. And furthermore, we the tag team division is looking good, and who knows what's going to happen. You know, if, and this is a big if, Big E.
Yeah. I also think that they're making a big deal out of this brand new briefcase. It's one thing to mention it once. It's another thing to mention it three and four and five times. Well, that's a briefcase that it was given to him by J.D. McDonough. It's a brand new briefcase. It's a personalized briefcase given to him. Something's up. I'm telling you something's up with that briefcase. It's not going to be official. Something's going to happen. Something is going to happen. And I'm fully convinced now that it will be Damian Priest who turns face. I'm fully convinced. Damian Priest is going to be the one to break off of the Judgment Day. I can see it. He's going to accept J.D. McDonough, and it's going to be the death blow. I mean, they're probably going to lose the titles to the Street Profits. I see that as probably going to happen. And we may have some very good Street Profits New Day matches out of that, too. So tag team division's looking okay. Now, you had Charlotte and Shotzi come out. And listen, Charlotte Flair, how do I word this? I know a lot of people don't like Charlotte Flair. I don't know why. Charlotte Flair has always been a fantastic athlete. She's put on fantastic matches. She's very good on the mic. She's willing to take a bump. She works hard. So I don't know why you don't like her. Having said that, Charlotte Flair does not look like she's having fun anymore. When Charlotte Flair walked out there, I said, this looks like a person who said, I've had about enough of professional wrestling. I don't necessarily care if I'm involved in a big angle. I don't necessarily care if I'm on television every week. I don't necessarily care if I'm involved in the title picture. And that's going to be a loss to the women's division if that's the case, Mike.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. Now, granted, we know what they want to do with her, right, in terms of getting her to 16, right? And probably yep. They're going to end up doing it anyway at some point. But, yeah, she doesn't look like she – I mean, remember that match she had with Rhea Ripley and
yep. How
fun that match was to watch? It was obvious that both of those two women were having fun in that match, right? They were having fun. And that's gone from Charlotte now. I mean, and the person that was having fun in that tag team was Shotzi.
Yep. Absolutely. And it was almost an afterthought to just having Asuka come out. Charlotte Flair has never been less involved. Right now, Charlotte Flair is almost like, well, I don't really have anything for you, so you just go out and do this match. It's really about Asuka and Io Sky getting their feud started. It's nothing to do with furthering you. Charlotte was never involved in those type of things. Everything that Charlotte did was to further an angle and her storyline, not somebody else's story. So I don't know, Todd, but it looks to me like Charlotte Flair has either asked for a very reduced schedule, or has been given one and is really being downplayed here for a while.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about Charlotte Flair, and when she first came into the WWE, they gave her a lot. She was in a lot of storylines. She was had a lot of a big time schedule. And now she asked for a later schedule, or they just gave her a later schedule to work with. Seemed like she didn't want to be there.
Something seems off. I watched her and I just said, this is somebody going through the motions. This is somebody like saying, well, I have a contract, so I'm just going to go out and do this, but I'm not too, I don't know. That's the feel I got. Another thing I wanted to talk about, now this is just a rumor, but for the people who remember way back to the Mr. Kennedy era in the WWE, he said Randy Orton got him fired. He said Randy Orton told Vince McMahon and company, Kennedy's not safe to work with. I'm not working with him. And anybody who does is crazy. And if you continue to use him, a lot of guys are going to refuse to work with him. Kennedy's told this story for a long time. From what I'm hearing, they patched it up. From what I'm hearing, one reached out to the other. I don't know who reached out to who, but they're okay. And I'm hearing that we may see a return of Kennedy to the WWE. That could be interesting. Depends on whether they want to make him a heel or a face, but, man, I could see some L.A. Knight Kennedy feud. I think the WWE is slowly coming to the realization that they need to get back to being world wrestling entertainment. They're seeing that the indie style, longer matches, harder fought, whatever, over in AEW is not equaling ratings. It's not. WWE, by minute, can tell their ratings. They literally can say, when this person is on the air, the ratings go down. When this person is on the air, ratings go up. And what they're seeing is guys like LA Knight and The New Day and those type of people and The Bloodline and Judgment Day goes up. So they're saying to themselves, we need the entertainment value back. Well, you've got it in LA Knight. You've got it in guys, you know, like, I guess, in Grayson Waller and The Miz and The Judgment Day and The Bloodline. So now I think they're going to run with it a little bit more. I also have noticed that they put Edge back in the SmackDown montage. He was out. So I don't know whether he signed another contract or I don't know if it was an accident, Mike, but he's back in it.
Who's this now?
Edge.
Edge. Oh, wow. So if he's back in it, and you know what? You know what? What's her name? We've talked about Trish Stratus. I mean, she's entertaining as hell. And she's another one that's an older wrestler that has come back and has done really, really well. They can get a run out of them. And if they're going back to entertainment, it can only help. It can only help because we know the New Day is entertaining. We know the Street Profits are entertaining. You know, we know that, right? So we know all these people are entertaining. And Kennedy is extremely entertaining. And we did, I believe at one point we did see Kennedy versus LA Knight / Eli Drake back when they were in they were both in Impact.
Yep, sure did. So they could rekindle that. Listen, Edge was rumored to go to AEW and be with Christian. Still could happen. I don't know. But he was put back in that montage. That's all I know. I also know this. I at the risk of sounding whatever, sometimes I think the guys who run to AEW are like the men or women. I don't want to be, you know, misogynistic or whatever, who run to their mistress or their sugar daddy when they're married. And they say, oh, my mistress is wonderful, and she's young and vibrant and new and fresh. And, you know, I won't leave my wife, but I'm going to be with my mistress. Or, oh, I got a sugar daddy taking care of me, until they don't. And then guess who you go back to? You go back to your wife, or you go back to your husband. You go back to the steady. I think a lot of people are starting to realize AEW is the mistress or the sugar daddy. And eventually they're going to go back to the steady. I don't care what Chris Jericho says. He's going to finish his career in WWE. I don't care. Maybe John Moxley won't. But I think a lot of them will. I think a lot of them will. Now, I know Aleister Black, I think, was granted his release. Did we predict that or did we predict that? Mike, when Aleister Black was touted as Aleister Black or Malachi Black is all elite, what did we say here? We said he's not going to get treated the same. They're going to use him as flavor of the week for about 2 months, and he's not going to get over huge, and they're just going to bury him into, you know, once in a blue moon having a feud or once in a blue moon. He's not going to be the big deal. He was even in WWE when they weren't using him all that much. And, man, once again, we hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, now that his wife is kind of in a gimmick with in an upswing in the WWE, it's more than likely he's going to end up back in the WWE, you know? That's another guy. I mean, well, I know Miro. I know Lana just – C.J. Perry just got there. But I'm kind of wondering how long this contract is for. Number one, number two, how soon they're going to put them together? Because if they put them together real soon, too soon, that's going to tell us one thing. That's going to tell us that Lana's contract isn't going to be long, and that they're going to end up letting Miro go anyway. You know. So,
well, see, now I think the chances of Miro staying is very high. His wife is signed, and Daniel Bryan might be controlling the show he's on, and he's a good close friend of Daniel Bryan. Miro may see the writing on the wall now and say, well, I'm going to get a much better deal, a much, much better lot in life with Daniel Bryan. And now my wife's over here, so everything's kumbaya. You now have a much better chance of keeping Miro than you did 6 months ago. So that'll be interesting to see. The proof, you're right, is in the pudding. If CJ Perry signed a 3-year deal, then Miro's staying. I can guarantee he's staying. Which is a boost for them. They also have not used him the way he should be. They're a little confused on how to use Miro. And for a while, they weren't using him at all. Sometimes AEW does that, and they're not really sure quite how to use certain guys, even when those guys come from a place where clearly they showed you how to use them. That's why I don't have any confidence in how to use the people who are their own homegrown or come out of the indie. But with Daniel Bryan in charge, if that's going to be the case, I think you got a better chance of seeing Miro stay where he is and maybe being used properly. So aside from that, we'll see what ends up happening. I predict an upswing in the ratings. You got to realize that Collision's going to be against college football all freaking season. So you're going to have that. You know, you're going to have the CM Punk fans say, we're not watching. Okay, don't. But eventually those ratings are going to creep up when the storylines start getting better. And I want to finish off by just getting our panel's opinion. Does the WWE take the chance and sign CM Punk to anything, whether it be once in a blue moon in the ring, maybe 4 or 5 matches over a course of a year, or announcing, or backstage, or managerial, or creative, or anything? Do they take the chance and sign CM Punk to anything at all, Mike? What's your percentage? Give me on a scale of, 1% to 100%. What's the chances WWE does take that chance?
You just brought up an excellent idea. You don't want him in the ring, and you don't want him, on the commentary table. Well, stick him as a manager. Make him kind of the next era Paul Heyman, or somebody right. like that, That could be a deal. If that's the deal, go ahead and sign him. If he's going to be a manager for somebody, if you can find him somebody like Omos, they can't talk, and you stick him with that guy, kind of like what Christian is doing with the dinosaur guy, That guy
right.
doesn't talk. Christian is the talker for that guy, right? Jake the Snake. Right?
Yeah, I mean, if I was going to bring CM Punk back, if I sit down at the table with CM Punk, I would say, we're going to sign that contract where you don't say anything outlandish or you're not getting paid. And if you get into any backstage altercations, you're getting fined $100,000 first time. Second time, you're fired without pay. Contract null and void. However, what we want you to come in as this bitter guy who says, no federation wants me because I'm too friggin' outlandish. WWE owes me. WWE should take me back. They should be glad to have me, but they're not. So, you know what? Through AEW, I'm going to destroy WWE. I'm literally going to destroy WWE. I've almost destroyed AEW. Their ratings are in complete collapse, thanks to me. And now I'm going to destroy WWE, and I'm going to use this guy to do it and bring in a guy. You might have a good angle there, especially if you get Seth Rollins being the one to stick up for him and saying he's not running anything here. He's not destroying anything. I built this from the ground up. When there was nobody else, I was the guy who carried this goddamn federation on my back. And I will be damned if some idiot like CM Punk is going to ruin that. You might have a good storyline. It might be worth it. Derek is saying zero chance. There is never zero chance in wrestling. I learned my lesson when Bret Hart punched Vince McMahon in the face, and I said there is zero chance you will see Bret Hart on WWE again. I was wrong. There is never zero chance. I say 25% chance you might see CM Punk in some capacity. What's your thoughts, Todd?
I think you're absolutely right there. Like you said, if you do see him, you see CM Punk back, if he comes back in some capacity, I've been saying this for a while, for the whole entire show. We've been saying this for the whole entire show. Have him come back as like a manager or something, not as a wrestler.
He's got to come back in that bitter attitude, though, where he cuts the fans down, too, and says, I don't want you cheering for me. None of you did me any favors. I never did anything for you guys. You never got the hint that I don't like you. And I never did. You never took that hint. If you can make him come back as that kind of a heel, I would reluctantly and try to work out something, but I would be very cautious, Mike. What do you think the percentage chances are?
I'm going to give it a little bit higher of a percentage, to say 30. But we'll see. You know, and you're right about the bitter end. Basically, when they were doing that contract gimmick about him and his new contract and proving himself to the, basically that's what that was, him being bitter about this, that, and the other, and not being paid and all this stuff, and then they come back and they do the whole thing with Triple H being fired and him saying, well, all you smiley good guys, I'm in a foxhole with you, with these other guys that are out in the parking lot. Now, basically, that's what that was, those two gimmicks.
No, that's absolutely right, Mike. There is a story to be told here. There is a really good storyline to be told here. However, you are playing with fire, and you have to understand that you are playing with fire. So is that storyline worth playing with fire for? I don't know. Right now, I'm leaning toward no. 75% chance they just let CM Punk fade into the sunset. Impact would sign him in a minute, but I don't think they can afford him. However, WWE, I'm never going to say never. So 25%, maybe. Maybe. Like I said, there's a good story to be told, but I don't know if it's worth the potential risk of signing a guy like CM Punk, who at any moment can just go off or be hurt or quit or whatever he does, because the one thing Kevin Nash has said this week that makes sense to me is CM Punk may need psychiatric help. There's something not right. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening. We will be back here on Tuesday with the Monday Night Raw report.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio.